A Broken Promise, submitted by Emily.
About 2 years ago, one night, around 11 p.m., while my siblings and I were already in bed, my little cousin Judy sleeping in the living room, our parents were outside, talking and smoking, all of a sudden, they saw a lechuza fly by. I grew up hearing stories about witches transforming into lechuzas. We all know not to mess with that. My mom, however, wasn't a believer. She decided to whistle at it, and it circled back. As it got closer, my aunt screamed, "Judy!" and rushed inside. After my aunt saw Judy was safe, she went to the restroom to wash her face. My aunt tried to laugh it off, claiming she had no idea what had happened. Seconds later, she rushed out of the restroom, grabbing and scratching her face. She was crying, saying she looked like an old lady. My aunt was 25, by the way. My uncle hugged her to try to calm her down, but she kept screaming and pushing him away. My parents and uncle were all very confused, as my aunt was fine minutes before. At this point, I heard all the commotion. I went to see what was going on. My mom saw me, placed Judy in my arms, and told me to take her to my room. I caught a glimpse of my dad and uncle. They were holding my aunt's arms as she was trying to fight them off. She was yelling, "Déjame, maldita perra! Leave my daughter alone! Don't touch her!" while looking at the window. The screaming and curses went on for about 30 minutes. My dad grabbed holy water and began spraying it on my aunt while praying. We're not super religious, but we didn't know what else to do. Then my aunt started laughing nervously, telling my dad, "You're being silly." Then she started screaming that it hurt and begged him to stop. Eventually, my dad came to my room, and we waited for my uncle to calm my aunt down. After an hour, she was calm enough to explain what she saw. My aunt was in the restroom, washing her face. She looked up at the mirror and saw herself as an old lady. She said she knew the lechuza wanted to take her baby. She kept seeing images of a woman. She said she didn't remember anyone talking to her or holding her, just that she was absolutely terrified. A quick thing I should mention. My aunt worships the Santísima Muerte, death. Years ago, she made an oath not to do any drugs, even cigarettes. We heard my uncle whisper, "You promised her you wouldn't do that." And my aunt kept repeating, I know, I won't do it again. I don't know if this is related, but a few days after it all happened, we kept finding dead animals outside her house. My mom found a bird with its head missing outside her window, yet it didn't have any blood. They also found one of their pet birds with its eyes missing. My dad said it was almost as if the eyes were scooped out. The other birds were fine. It's probably some cat or animal. But it was still very unsettling. After this incident, my aunt started going to church. As for me, I haven't been able to sleep without some sort of nightlight since.
Welcome to the True Scary Stories with Edie and Nick podcast.
That's a good impression.
Thank you. This is the podcast where two comedians read scary stories submitted to us by our fans, the Uglies. What's up, Uglies?
Hey, guys.
Hey. And some of the stories we find scoured all over the internet, really in just the creepiest places. Sometimes just the walls of bathrooms that we just find scary stories, or we see them. We witness them in the bathroom.
Yes. One time I found a story in the corner of the Universal Studios website.
That is very true. And that's one of the little secret. You know how they have, like, the secret Mickeys?
Mm-hmm.
That's, like, the secret Universal stuff. Mm-hmm. And, as you know, I was Miss Universal City. I went to Miss California, so I appreciate...
Oh.
The
very good for you.
All right. So, this is a podcast that has some commentary. Not a lot, though. But if you want no commentary, you can check out our other episodes where they're just the terror episodes.
Yes.
And if you want to send your story to us, you can do it on the Facebook group, the Instagram, or the website, All Our True Scary Stories with Edie and Nick. Okay, so we already did this a segment about the La Lechuza.
Yes.
And for those of you who maybe didn't see that, it's basically a Mexican folklore. And it's a legend about a witch that was exposed by practicing the devil's magic.
Yes, and it turns into a big owl.
Yes, and she turns into an owl with a human face. So what happened was she's practicing devil magic, and the town didn't like that, so they ended up ending her life. And now her, and not just only her, but other witches and warlocks haunt us today.
Dun, dun, dun.
I think it has something to do with the Mothman, because the Mothman looks a lot like an owl. If you see a moth, it's got that short head like an owl and the big eyes. So the La Lechuza and the Mothman might be of the same breed of things. Don't you think?
Very much so, yes. I mean, you know, I don't know, because we always said that the Mothman could be alien and La Lechuza seems more spiritual.
I think these are all interdimensional beings that exist on different planes of reality, including our plane now, and they get through the different worlds through portals at certain times, kind of like Stargate.
I mean, yes, there is that possibility, very much so.
I think aliens and interdimensional beings like this are the same kind of thing, including demons and stuff like that.
So spiritual beings, demons are...
Yeah, I think like Bigfoot, demons, all these things are just different entities that live in these different planes that are closely related to ours.
Yeah, it could be that spirits and demons are on a different dimension. Of course, there's different dimensions. We're in the third, and
there is
the fourth, fifth, and whatever. So yeah, very much so that they could be a very different dimensional being.
I think we don't see them around us all the time because they're hiding in their dimensions or different dimensions. And like aliens, they can come through like wormholes and things like that to us and then go back to wherever their dimension is.
Scary.
Yes, it is very scary. But I think all these things are the same thing. They're just interdimensional beings. Including angels, demons, and stuff like that.
Yeah, I might say that these are very different from aliens, but I see where you're going with it. So yeah, so this aunt promised to a spiritual being, Santísima Muerte, to not do any drugs, even smoking. So if you remember the beginning of the story, they were smoking outside on the porch, and that's when Lechuza showed up.
But doesn't Muerte mean dead?
Yeah.
Okay, so she was also messing with evil spirits
of the dead, yes.
Like the folklore goes,
yes,
that she was messing with the devil spirits.
Yes, kind of messing with maybe it's not dark magic or black magic, you know, there's like white magic or whatever.
But
a darker spirituality.
Death. Yeah.
Yes.
So something of death.
Yes.
Okay. So yeah, it seems like a very similar story and that maybe she became the La Lechuza because I probably said that so wrong, but because she was also dealing in dark magic.
Well, I think that it was you made a promise,
right,
that you weren't going to smoke. You broke it. And now we're going to scare you.
Right.
You know, just to remind you.
Right. Don't do it.
You made a promise.
Okay. I get that. They're like the DARE program.
Yes.
You better not do anything bad.
You better not do it. Yeah. I mean, I've had McGruff, the crime dog, show up to my house.
I've seen him in the paranormal dreams I've had. Yes. McGruff's like, you better not drink anymore.
Yes, we're here to take a bite out of crime.
Yeah, you better not commit any crimes. I agree with that. And so if you're listening to this, don't do any of that.
Yeah, just know that whatever you made a promise to, whether it's the Santísima Muerte or McGruff the crime dog or the DARE program line, you got to hold it up, man. They're going to come visit you.
Santísima Muerte sounds like Santeria, which is black magic. Muerte, which sounds like magic of the death.
Mm-hmm.
So it's black magic of the death that sounds like
to me. Scared.
All right, good. So don't do any of that stuff. We don't do that.
Yes.
She'll Be Brought Back, written by Ghost Pick.
In 2001, back when I was 13, a friend of mine wanted me to help her grandparents set up their computer. I obliged and rode my bicycle to their house. As I get there, clouds appear. So I decided to make this pretty quick. I set up the computer, install AOL for them, show them all how it works and such. While I'm doing this, their other granddaughter, who's about 4 years old, was sleeping in the other room. I finish the job, get my backpack, and get ready to leave. A sudden and cold breeze whooshed through the room. It was odd since all the doors and windows were shut. The grandparents looked toward the kitchen. I followed their gaze. What I saw made me freeze in place. There were three creatures standing in the kitchen. Two of them were short gray creatures with a thicker neck than described and eyes closer to the sides of their heads. They wore silver jumpsuits. In between them was a taller creature. It looked like a humanoid mantis. It was wearing a black robe with a yellow stripe going down the middle. They walked to another room. A minute later, they returned with the robed creature carrying the granddaughter in its arms. It's looking at me. I get the feeling it knows who I am. I don't know why I got the feeling, but I did. I was very scared. More of the situation than of them. The grandparents were looking at them too, but not doing anything. I decided to say, screw this. Fought off all the fear I could and clumsily charged toward them. I didn't even make three steps before the grandfather stopped me and told me they will bring her back. The creatures didn't move and continued to look at me. I couldn't get any more words out of my throat. I didn't even know what to think at this point. All of a sudden, the light stretched around them and they vanished. An odd glow remained for a few seconds before fading. After a minute of awkward silence, the grandfather repeated, "She'll be brought back soon." I leave. I rode my bicycle home as fast as I could, looking back to see if some ship was hiding in the clouds. I didn't sleep that night. The next day, I told my friend what happened. She said, it has happened before. The grandparents and other family members have tried to stop it, but to no avail. They just accepted it with a look of defeat and moved on. Granddaughter was brought back after a few hours. A while after this, their whole family moved elsewhere.
Well, yeah, you gotta move elsewhere because there's something there that's not to be messed with. Listen, if the door shuts on its own, if there's like a breeze and the door shuts on its own, I'm out of here. I'm out of here. I don't care if I'll leave everything I own here.
Yes, I will say you've got 100 hours on AOL. Bye.
Yeah. You can have my 100 hours on AOL.
Bye. You'll get kicked off if somebody calls. Bye.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else you want to say about this one?
Well, you know, the fact that this person said that they believed that the praying mantis alien, like, recognized them. It makes me wonder if maybe...
They're praying mantis?
No, that this is... this happens in this community. And they're just like, yeah, with this community, if you have a younger child, aliens are going to show up.
Yeah.
Take them away for a little... So maybe this happened...
Or maybe they implanted a praying mantis humanoid. And they've been mating with the regular humans. And so they're like offspring. But hopefully they're not like regular praying mantises and like eat their offspring or eat the heads of their mates stuff like that. I don't know if you know this about me, but praying mantises are on my list of 5 most hated animals.
I did not know
they're
that.
They're so scary. I hate them. They're so ugly looking. Except for if you're the aliens ones, then you're very cool, very hot. I am very submissive.
We are listening, idiot.
Yeah. Whatever you want. Please don't kill me.
Okay, but, we are listening.
But the regular praying mantises, I do not like them.
We are loyal uglies.
Yeah, that is like the... And then I don't like whales either. The way a blue whales look with their trapdoor mouth and
we're
like
listening.
I don't like that.
We're listening to.
They're so ugly. And I there's 5, but I won't go through all of them.
Whales are gonna go get you.
An encounter with the blue-skinned beings.
The number of alien species in the universe is the subject of numerous hypotheses. Entities from outer space have been spotted by many, UFO enthusiasts, abductees, and even members of the government. When you ask the average person to describe an alien, they will typically describe the gray-skinned, big-eyed aliens. But if there are an innumerable amount of alien species, there is no way they all look one way. In fact, one man, Alex Collier, has claimed to not only come in contact with but even be mentored by a couple of blue-skinned beings from Andromeda, known to the UFO comedian as Andromedans. The Andromedans are one of the thousands of extraterrestrial races in existence. Andromedans are humans with bluish skin and are taller than 2 meters. From his earliest years as a child to the middle of his adolescence, Collier had regular encounters with extraterrestrial life. After a break of several years, during which he served as a helicopter pilot in the U.S. Army, the contact started up again in 1985. Collier encountered the two Andromedans, and they actually brought him on board their spacecraft. What followed was a 3-month period where these Andromedans exposed Collier to the teachings of the Andromedans. The Andromedans told him about the spirituality of the universe, life in the universe, and Earth's place in the history of the galaxy. According to Collier, all human life forms began in the Lyra constellation, but a war made their stars blow up, so people had to move to other parts of the galaxy to stay alive. These beings, with varied DNA, became exposed to different celestial bodies, which led to the variety of skin tones. In the Andromeda constellation, the Andromeda beings are one of the oldest societies. The Andromeda civilization has a single government, Their civilization is 4,700 years more spiritually and 5,000 years more technologically advanced than we are. They do, however, strike a healthy balance between the spiritual and technological aspects of their lives. To put it another way, they use technology to progress spirituality. Andromedans have studied all the sciences, and this has made them telepathic and clairvoyant. This is due to the fact that there are multiple levels of dimensions. We are in the third dimension right now. We haven't yet gotten to the fourth, let alone the fifth. Consciousness is what differentiates the third and fourth dimensions. Everyone has the ability to be telepathic and read others' minds. In the fourth dimension, there is a collective consciousness. A being becomes clairvoyant when they enter this dimension because energy systems and fields may be observed in the state of consciousness. As a result, each individual is genuine, open, and free of hidden agendas. The judicial system makes decisions based on the energy fields, yet dualities will persist and judgment processes will be altered. Andromeda's inhabitants have never known a society as tyrannical as ours. In every incarnation, all souls are aware of themselves and where they are headed. They know who they are and what their prior incarnations were like. As a bonus, they can watch their evolution in the afterlife. According to Collier, there are regressive aliens controlling the Earth. Those aliens arrived on Earth from the Alpha Draconi star station. Collier has stated that humanity is divided by two philosophical belief systems. One conveys love and freedom of choice, while the other demonstrates control and resource use. He claims that the Andromedans are the result of human DNA manipulation. Earth has been manipulated extensively over 5,700 years. However, the aliens from Orion began manipulating human DNA structure 14,000 years ago. In his final lecture before he retired from the UFO lecture circuit in 2002, Collier spoke on how aliens from an ancient race known as the Founders are responsible for creating the planet's ecosystems and making them habitable. Paltal is the name given to this ancient alien race by the Andromedans and the Palladians. He even said that these aliens could get rid of a planet's moons to change the distance between the planet and its sun to control the amount of radiation. When Collier visited one of these potentially habitable planets, he said that because of Earth's poor reputation, the inhabitants were terrified to see him. Throughout the cosmos, humans are the only species capable of enslaving and killing their own people for their own gain. The Andromedans are said to have the ability to build a solar system. When it comes to technology, we're around 4,300 to 4,500 years behind the Andromedans. They do not count years in the same way as we do on Earth in 365 days. According to many extraterrestrials, 1 year is the time it takes for every cell in their body to copy itself, which takes about 34 years. Collier estimated that the planets in the eight galaxies closest to our own have a total population of 135 billion people. He claims that humans are made up of 22 different alien races.
Totally agree, but I think there's more than 22 different alien races.
And no, this... that we are made up of 22
different alien races. So we have like the ant people, the grays, and...
the Andromedans.
Right, okay, I totally believe that. And I totally believe that they've been on Earth, and they have been helping us this whole time, including what I think is the kind of... what's another word for angry? Aggressive race of aliens, which I think are in the ocean, that we do not mess with.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like they stay in their part and we stay in our part, while the other aliens we kind of have a relationship with. I think that's why we mostly don't explore the ocean. We don't go there. And I think that's why we don't explore most of the parts of the great forests. Because think of the things that are protected in by conservation and stuff like that. You know, none of these government people care about any of it, right? But they protect the middle of the ocean, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they protect the forests and stuff like that. So I think that's where these portals and that's where these things are hiding. And that's what they're keeping us from. Because they always say, like, we only know, like, 2% of the ocean or whatever. Well, why is that? Why are people investing more to go up into space than just spending money to figure out how to make a rocket ship to the bottom of the ocean? Nobody's doing that, really.
Very true. Do you think that maybe, in the underground part of Disney World, the most protected part of the park, there's aliens?
No.
Oh, okay. Just wondering. All right. So, yeah. So, this is a very interesting insight. The Andromedans, the fact that we are made up of different aliens. We are beings that, you know, are part of history that comes from a completely different galaxy, or right. our galaxy, different part of it.
Right.
And we grew up this way just because we are.
I would have to look up what astronaut it was who said that when they went to Mars, there were structures on Mars and that they had to pretend that there weren't.
Buzz Lightyear.
Buzz Lightyear, yes. I think it was Buzz Lightyear. He said, there are structures up here to infinity and beyond. Yes. There are structures up here. Okay, cool. Well, I believe that. And I do. And I believe some of the species of aliens still exist on Earth. They just exist in these different dimensions, and they can... Yes.
Or they just look different. They camouflage.
Right. Which is what I told you before, that when I was reviewing like the CIA information, they said that the aliens walk among us. They just scramble our brains to make us think that they look regular, but they do not look regular.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I think I did a whole thing about Nikola Tesla being a Venetian. You know, like he was actually part.
Oh, he was a Venetian. Yeah. I've heard of that too.
Maybe his father was Venetian, and he,
because he had some knowledge that we do not have access to, and like pyramids and stuff like that. Maybe these people were Venetian.
Yeah.
Or maybe they're just way smarter than us. Maybe there's regular people, but they're way smarter than us. I can't comprehend that because I'm not that smart.
Neither can I.
The Shepherd and His Guest.
In 1979, the Turgay region of Kazkha, SSR near Akalik, was an industrial city. Now this place is mostly deserted. Sagnbay, a local shepherd, awoke in the middle of the night to find the sky sparkling. The shepherd left to find the source of the odd light on his horse. While traveling a few kilometers from his native village, Sagnbay saw some strange object falling from the sky. Thinking that it could be a Soviet space satellite, he moved closer towards it. He was surprised to discover a silver disc buried in the rough earth. After deciding it was pointless to approach such a find, Sangbai returned to the hamlet. An escape pod that looked like a dark coal egg was found about 100 meters away from the fallen object. He decided to move back and observe it from a safe distance. At that moment, the shepherd's horse snorted and pranced his front legs to move away. Even though the shepherd knew that it would be better to leave the place, his curiosity made him stay there. That's when the aircraft's occupant sprang to his feet and walked to the shepherd. According to the shepherd, the entity was tall and had long limbs. In the darkness, its large eyes glowed brightly. The extraterrestrial entity was welcomed by the shepherd with open arms. He asked the entity to sit on the horse while he walked home on foot. To say that his wife was astonished is a complete understatement. He thought that his wife would run away after seeing the alien, but it appeared that his wife was under hypnosis. Without questioning anything, she obeyed her husband's command. The shepherd treated his overnight visitor with much respect. He also asked his wife to cook beshbamark in the middle of the night, and she set the table. The woman made the meal, again avoiding eye contact with the guest in order to avoid appearing overly interested. The alien tasted the dough and ate the whole curd. A national kaskak dish of dry balls made from sheep, goat, or camel cottage cheese. The woman prepared a bed for the alien. The alien refused, using gestures. Instead, the alien sat on the table and closed his eyes. Whether he slept or not, the couple didn't know. The next morning, the shepherd saw the military UAZ in his yard. He realized that they must be here for the alien. In order to save the alien from the Soviet military, he held the alien's hand and took it to the haystack. He gestured for it to hide there. After hiding the alien, he came out to meet the officers. They asked the shepherd whether he had spotted an unusual entity. The shepherd answered that he was in a deep sleep last night. After roaming around the village for some time, the officers left. For the next 2 weeks, the alien lived in the shepherd's house. During those 2 weeks, he interacted with the villagers. The alien learned to play checkers and cards. He was also able to beat them in a game. During his stay there, he interacted with the villagers without uttering a single word. He was able to understand their language. On June 26, 1979, he disappeared from Sangbai's house. The story was made public by a Russian girl, Tatiana Linova, who told it to reporters. She discovered the alien when she was 9 years old. She used to live in Arkhangelsk, I forgot how I said it, with her father, who was a veterinarian by profession. One day, the girl, along with her father, visited the shepherd's house as her father and the shepherd were friends. They sat there, had tea, and had some chit-chat, when suddenly some noise came from outside. The shepherd whispered something in the father's ear and took him outside the house by holding his elbow. The girl was asked to sit there quietly, but she secretly followed them to the barn. Inside the cow shed, the girl saw an enigmatic creature surrounded by a few men. According to her, the creature's head was twice the size of a human. Its eyes were half the size of a human. Her father told her this whole story when she grew up. One thing the girl linked was an incident that happened the same day of the alien's disappearance, the Turgai incident. This incident occurred near the city of Dezharveznik, not far from the local military unit that supplied the mines with R-36 nuclear ballistic missiles called Satan. This occurrence occurred 100 kilometers from Akarlik. On the day of the incident, children from the Bereskovia pioneer camp saw aliens. Just a day before the event, witnesses spotted fireballs in the sky. A group of pioneers encountered a 3-meter tall humanoid. They spotted the humanoid when the daughter of the local police mayor, Savaltin Kajava, lit up a fire on the slope of a nearby hill after dinner. She was also among the members of the pioneers. When the children started running towards the camp to hide, the humanoid started following them. They hid behind the fence of the pioneer camp. They felt safe. They invited the alien and asked him for a talk. The alien refused the invitation. It was getting dark. As the night grew and the alien's eyes sparkled red, which looked scary, Svetlana Kovacha remembered it. The girl who was the pioneer leader was walking around the camp. She spotted a giant humanoid and ran for her life. Later, she returned to the site where she spotted the alien along with the watchman, but they didn't find anything there. The next day, everyone heard a rumble similar to that of a jet taking off. The whole story was suspected to have some relation to the nearby military base. Some reports suggest the base had up to 15% of the nuclear potential of the USSR. The whole incident became viral amongst the general public when a camp worker wrote about it in the editors to one of the Soviet youth magazines. If both the shepherd incident and the girls incident are linked, it suggests that aliens may have come for their lost friend who was with the shepherd, during which they also gathered information about the military base. Yet, because of the kindness the shepherd, Sangbei, showed the crashed alien, it's hypothesized that this may have saved the Soviet nuclear weapons base from a UFO invasion. Kindness is a gesture understood no matter the language.
All right. Well, I like this one. This seems kind of like the where this all came from is the aliens came here. They were smart enough to be like, we're not just going to come to everybody because, you know, people don't act right. A lot of people don't act right. So we're going to go to certain people. We're going to introduce ourselves and we're going to have a good relationship.
Yeah, I mean, I've always thought that nuclear power, nuclear weapons, anything nuclear is a red flag to the aliens.
I've always thought that too, because yes. What was it during, after we, the USA did Hiroshima, that's when all of the alien kind of stuff started happening.
Yes. And I think it was to them, it was like, oh no, this planet that we thought wasn't really, you know, a big issue.
Yeah.
Has discovered a power.
Or this planet that we thought was like a, just like kind of a experiment to us.
Yeah.
Like, let's combine, like when people breed dogs or something like that, they're like, let's combine the smartness of this alien group with the emotion of this alien group.
That's really messed up.
With the
taste for s'mores with this alien
right,
group.
Right, or like the, what is it? Like the wanting to get better.
The
evolution.
Oh, yes, there you go.
So they might have just mixed it all in together like it was like a labradoodle.
Mm.
Or like a Maltese poodle. And they
makes
were like,
sense.
This is going to be great. And then all of a sudden the Maltese poodles started like bombing where they lived. And they were like, wait a second. Maybe the Maltese poodle wasn't the best breed.
Yeah, if our...
Kind of like what happened with the Maltese poodle.
Yes, if our dogs started figuring out nuclear weapons, we'd all be very concerned.
Right. But it's also like the Maltese poodle, like where they were like, poodles are the smartest dogs. So they started breeding them with other things.
Mm-hmm.
And then they found out they couldn't control the temperament. And it was not a good idea to breed Maltese poos and labradoodles and all that kind of stuff.
You don't know what you're mixing.
They couldn't figure out what they were mixing. So maybe that happened with humanity. Where they were like, we're going to mix all these things. Oh, man, this is not a good mix.
I mean, yeah, possibly. And, yeah, I still stand by the fact that I think nuclear weapons, because basically a nuclear weapon is the splitting of an atom, which is you're not supposed to do, was a big signal to other species, other races, where it's like, hey, these people are figuring out a science that they're not ready to handle.
It seems like it was kind of common sense to all of them. Like, we don't split an atom. Like it would be to us, where it's like, you don't bleach your hair 5 times a day. That's going to result in all your hair falling out, right? Yeah. And to them, they're like, yeah, they all know that.
Yeah, don't stick anything metal in a microwave.
Yeah, they all know that. And then we were like, no. We think you should bleach our hair. Multi poodles everywhere. And they were like, whoa, okay. We didn't know that was going to happen.
Yes.
And so then they had to come back and intervene.
Yes. And I think that's what it is. So whether this shepherd's kindness kept them from avoiding some kind of weird nuclear, you know, fight, battle, whatever it is, or just the aliens being aware, like, look, we're going to go save our friend. We're happy you took care of him. But you know, we're also going to figure out how dangerous you guys are. It doesn't seem too dangerous, and we're going to go back, which is, it sounds very plausible that aliens do reconnaissance missions on this planet, on us, on another species.
Yeah.
Cause we do it. We do it to each other.
Somebody had, you know, those glass structures where they get some like water from the ocean and they're like snails grow in it.
Okay.
I commented on one of those videos and I said, we are the snails. Yeah. Somebody made all of this ecosystem and everything, knowing that snails would grow, and we're the snails.
Yeah.
So some smarter form of life basically made that ecosystem just like we make those ecosystems now, and knew there would be snails growing here, and we're the snails. And what would you do if you had this ecosystem in your house and the snails in it started bombing things in your house? You would have to go up to it and be like, hey, what's going on here?
Yeah, just kind of like when we tag animals and we send them back into nature. I mean, if you asked an animal what that experience was, it was like, I was abducted. I was taken to a lab. They stuck something in me and then they sent me back home.
I have a chip in me now. Yeah. You are so right. All right, let's keep going. Below Los Angeles.
In 1933, mining engineer George Warren Shufeldt of Los Angeles, California, USA, stated that he had invented a revolutionary new device for exploring underground deposits of oil, gold, and other valuable resources, as well as detecting underground voids and cave systems. He called this thing an X-ray machine. Although it looked more like an improved dowsing tool, a pendulum suspended from a copper wire in a cylindrical glass case placed in a black box on 3 supports. George Warren Shufeldt said his machine could use X-rays to analyze the chemical, electrical, and physical properties of matter at great depths down to several miles. For this, a certain mysterious process was used, the details of which Shufeldt did not really explain to anyone. But he assured that this was a recently discovered scientific principle. George Warren Shufeldt then began using his mysterious device throughout Los Angeles in search of gold and other valuable materials. One day, when he was working right in the center of the city, his device gave out very interesting data. Data showing that there was an extensive system of tunnels underground. Shufeldt said that these winding tunnels went all the way to the top of Mount Washington and even passed under Santa Monica Bay. He added that these were not just passages dug in the ground. No, it was a competently and structured labyrinth created with rooms and chambers of various sizes. And all of this was such a huge scale that, according to Shufeldt's estimates, at least 5,000 people could easily be accommodated there. An underground city. Even more surprising were his words that large reserves of gold were stored in the underground rooms and tunnels. He said, I realized that I was above a maze of tunnels. I noted the course of the tunnels, the location of large rooms scattered along the tunnel route, and the location of the gold deposits. But I could not understand the meaning of this. My X-ray pictures of the tunnels and rooms, which are underground voids and golden shots with perfect angles, sides and ends, and are scientific proof of their existence. But who was they? In search of answers, Shufeldt went on to an old chief of the local Hopi Indians, known as Chief Little Greenleaf. The chief seemed to be well aware of the ancient tunnel system that existed there. The chief told Shufelt a rather bizarre legend. According to Little Greenleaf, thousands of years ago, a race of people once lived here. The ancestors of the Mayan Indians, whom he called the Lizard People, aka Reptilians. They were called this because they worshipped lizards as a symbol of long life. This lost civilization was extremely technologically and intellectually advanced far beyond its time. They had many inventions and mechanisms, as well as a lot of gold. But one day, their world came to an end. About 5,000 years ago, a massive meteor shower fell on them. Few survived the catastrophe. They were saved only by retreating to underground shelters. They then built an entire city underground, working the stone with a mysterious chemical solution that could melt the rock. They reinforced the tunnels and rooms with an unknown, improved form of concrete. Many rooms were created as storerooms, but even more as gold stores. The Lizard People were so afraid to return to the surface that they built two more cities underground. One was in the area of California's Mount Shasta, now a great place of great UFO activity. The location of the second is unknown to anyone. This unknown city was the largest of the three. It became the center of an underground civilization. In the tunnels below Los Angeles, Shufelt also discovered what he called the Key Room. According to Hopi legend, this room contained 37 huge gold slabs. The slabs contained complete records of the origins of the human race. Shufelt added about the Lost City that, in large rooms in the domes of the hills above the City of the Labyrinths, 1,000 families were housed. Imperishable stocks of various herbs were stored in the catacombs to provide food for the people of the lizards for a long time. Shufelt began making plans to start excavating the underground city. He was able to get permission from the county review board to drill into the ground up to 1,000 feet. In February 1934, he began excavations in a vacant lot off of North Hill Street, just above where a large gold vault was located. Shufelt argued that when the treasure was found, the city authorities would be able to receive half of the find. The media enthusiastically spread his stories about gold. The excavation site soon turned into a real circus. Huge crowds of people came out to watch the workers. For several days, the workers dug into the ground. But when they dug 300 feet, 9 meters, they came across abundant silt layers of groundwater, after which the dug hole was at risk of collapse. Work slowed down. The gold was never seen. The interest of the public and the press gradually faded. Then Shufelt ran out of money to continue excavations. In subsequent years, nothing changed. Shufelt sank into obscurity, and in 1957, he died in poverty. His mysterious X-ray machine disappeared somewhere and has not been found.
Well, where is it?
Where is it?
I'm not going to be able to sleep because I'm going to be wondering where is it.
Well, it sounds like it's easy to make. A pendulum, copper wire, glass case.
No, don't tell the uglies because they're going to do it.
Do it.
Yeah, no, don't tell them to do
it.
You know there's a couple of them that are going to be doing it. You know that. Okay.
So there you go. An underground city below Los Angeles that may belong to the reptilian race.
I totally believe it. And I totally believe that because I've seen the footage of below Vegas, there's like an underground city there. And also the catacombs, the Paris catacombs.
Yes.
So underground
cities. And even Area 51's kind of underground.
Right. So, I mean, this is not a crazy idea.
Yeah.
Especially, and think about all the military structures that are below the water and below,
It's annoying that, this chief knew this legend, and we don't listen to our natives who may know more about the things that were here on Earth.
Right. And the area near Area 51, the natives used to call it where my brothers come from.
No, I didn't.
Because they would think of the aliens as their brothers. This is where my brothers are in the sky.
Yes.
So totally. And when you think about these ancient civilizations that have been here longer than we've known, like the Egyptians or the Native Americans or like a bunch of stuff that in Asia and stuff like that. Because the USA is a new, it's a new place.
Country. Yeah,
It's only been around for a couple hundred years. So when you think about all these, like the Roman Empire and stuff like that, they all say stuff about this. And even in like the Bible, it says stuff about like entities coming from the sky and stuff like that.
Yes.
It's not, that is common in all of these other places. And even in America, through the Native Americans, they have the same thing. My brothers who come from the sky, and they have all the entities like the Skinwalkers and the Walking Sam and a bunch of stuff. So we need to listen to the people who have been in this game longer than us.
Definitely. And, you know, there's two things I want to point out that grinds my gears. So the only reason, of course, they let him do this was because he promised gold. You know, and they're like, gold? Yeah, of course, do it. Gold, right? So that. And whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, people very enthusiastic when it starts, but people don't have patience. They never have patience, and then the enthusiasm dies down, and then a person doesn't have the ability to keep doing what they were doing. And it's interesting to me that the one thing we all are told and the one thing we all need to learn, patience is key. But we never have patience.
Which no one ever has patience.
Which is maybe why we never go beyond what we can, because we have no patience.
I have no patience. Right now, I want to take a shot. Yeah, that's what I know.
Right now, you're like, okay, Nick, say your part.
For the patience.
Even
okay,
the listeners.
Good.
Okay, Nick, we get it.
Let me take a shot. Okay, let's go. All right, we are on to the last story. And with that, the last story announcements.
What do you got coming up, you geeky?
Oh, well, let me tell you. I'm going to be in Sacramento, the most beautiful city in the nation where I grew up. I'm going to be there the 22nd and the 23rd.
Good job at the Sacramento Punchline.
At the Sacramento Punchline.
Dope. I will be in Vegas for the Dirty at 12:30 on Friday the 22nd, which is technically Saturday.
Which is a really fun show if you're going to be there.
Yeah, so come on out. And that's pretty much what I got right now. You know,
it's rowdy. It's like if 8 Mile was comedy.
Yeah, and other than that, guys, go at us on Instagram, TikTok. Like our videos, share our videos, and tell people about this podcast so we can get our numbers up. So hopefully we can start getting sponsors and putting out more stuff.
The numbers have been good. But listen... This is for free. We think we could do better.
We could do better.
Don't you think so? My TikTok has had like millions of views lately because I've been talking about the Glee stuff.
Good job.
Yeah, and it's been doing well. But I don't make any money off of that.
My Instagram's been doing good. It's so funny how it just...
But you don't
whatever
make any
it is,
money.
It is. I mean, I don't know.
You don't? Okay. I've had like millions of views. I have like multiple videos with millions of views on TikTok. I never made any money.
Well, you know... Don't think that we're all about money, guys. We are passionate about what we do, and we are grateful for what we do.
We love drinking.
Yes,
that's what
but
we like to
we
do.
We like drinking.
I'm just kidding. We don't participate in anything like that. We eat bagels.
We talk to the Santis Muerte.
All right. The last story is called Leave My Husband Alone. Been there, done that. All right. Leave My Husband Alone.
Shortly before midnight on July 4th, 2014, my husband had taken our daughter and her family home. The trip is almost 40 miles from our home to Silver Springs, Nevada from Carson City. While emptying the car, my husband had been walking in front of our car and behind our daughter's broken van. My husband felt his pant leg get tugged and his leg scratched. His first thought was that he got caught up on a weed. He called out to our daughter about the situation. He used a light from his phone screen to free himself from the weed. As he turned, there was a slender, emaciated, blue-gray hand with 4 digits, maybe 5, but he only saw 4, attached to a very skinny, shiny-skinned being. It disappeared after approximately 2 seconds. When my husband had called out, our daughter turned toward him. She was facing him when he turned the light to the ground. She also saw the being. She saw it quickly crawl back under the van, or recoil under the van. My husband and daughter quickly ran into the house. They felt a presence. My husband and daughter explained to my son-in-law what they had just seen. He went outside to see if it was still there after. After walking around a bit, he said he didn't see anything. They thought whatever it was had left, so my husband drove home. On his drive home, he saw strange colored lights, then a spotlight. This light in the sky was approximately between the towns of Stagecoach and Mark Twain. He thought that it was possibly a helicopter, but there was no sound. He started getting nervous. He pulled out his phone to take a picture of the light so he could get my opinion on it. Next thing he remembered, he was looking at a marquee clock in Dayton. This meant he missed an entire town. He noticed the time was 9 minutes off of our dash clock. He continued home through Mark Twain, Nevada. As he passed the marquee clock in Mound House, our car clock matched the time. He arrived at our house 27 minutes after leaving my daughter's home. This is impossible. With speeding, we make that trip in 45 minutes, an hour usually. When questioned about this, he started acting very off. My husband had been abducted in the past. There's a level of confusion when confronted, and small flashes of memory. His first answer to me was, when I asked him how he got home so fast, was, "The doctor said it was going to be all right." He heard himself and got even more confused. He became dazed. He asked out loud, "Why was I naked?" He could recall a doctor in a typical white lab coat. The doctor had military shoes, boots. There was a man in gray desert camos with the same boots as the doctor. He heard numbers being rattled off, but was unsure of when in relation to the doctors examining him. He heard his blood pressure stated out loud, 136 over 88. There was a light in his eyes. This made it hard for him to see much more than the doctor examining him. The doctor kept telling him, "Everything will be okay, and you'll be home soon." There was someone above him he could not see, but could hear. Remembering this helped him realize he was lying down. He also recalled hearing someone in the distance saying, "Portal collapse in 5. This sounded distorted, as if broadcast, maybe over a walkie-talkie. There was a scratch on my husband's leg, but it looked like it had been healing a while. His left hand was swollen and slightly bruised, as though he had an IV or blood drawn. There was a red mark that looked like it had healed a bit too, and his privates were very sore. He said the feeling was almost as bad as when I had my vasectomy. This was accompanied by a small wound. Now, this wasn't my husband's first experience with this. In fact, many years ago, in the same location, he had several other experiences. Being too afraid of the authorities, he never filed reports about the previous experiences. When he arrived home, I was on the phone with my daughter. She explained that her husband had seen the creature humanoid under the van after my husband left her place. The feeling of a presence would fade in and out. It had gotten stronger, so a few minutes after my husband left, they looked out their window. They saw the being in their backyard. I just wish these beings would leave my husband alone.
All right, so why they might not be leaving your husband alone?
Because they tracked him. They have him.
Right, but why are they tracking him and have him?
Well, it's just kind of like we said, you know, we tag sharks and things like that. And you don't really know why the scientists, oh, this shark over the...
Because we caught it.
Because
it was in their midst.
Yes.
Okay, but it would it not be in their midst if he didn't have some kind of spiritual gift that showed, like, that attracted them to that, to him?
I have a theory, but I'll let you...
Okay, but even think about, like, sharks and things like that that we track. Mm-hmm. We track them because we can reach them.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's all these billions of people in the world, you're going to attract the ones you can actually reach. And most of them you can't reach because they do not have the ability to be seen. Because he obviously has the ability to connect with these creatures.
Okay.
Just like sharks. It's like we don't track the ones we can't reach.
Mm-hmm. Of course, you're right. You want to hear my theory?
Yes, I would love to.
So here's my theory. Her husband has some kind of friendship relationship with the alien that they saw at the daughter's house. An emaciated alien. So
emaciated.
Emaciated. So it's like skinny from malnourishment.
Yes.
So what if this alien is running away from his people, the other aliens, but he has had contact with the father, who maybe as a kid fed him or something like that, or they just have contact.
Like a cat?
Yeah. Not like a cat, like a friend. Like, hey, you're my only friend. Somehow we connect.
Yeah.
You've like, taken care of, I'm emaciated because I'm not.
Emaciated.
So what if this husband has made a friend with a runaway alien and the government and the other aliens found the husband and said, "Look, we track you because this guy keeps reaching out to you."
Like kind of like he's a runaway and you've been abating a fugitive.
Yeah, like E.T. Think about it. E.T. made friends with Elliot.
Emaciated.
Elliot. Emaciated. So maybe there is a connection between him and this blue-gray alien that's hiding. Obviously, it's slender.
Yeah.
You know, who knows why.
It could be, you know, just like the regular aliens we think of, like the skinny ones with the big heads and the big eyes.
And who knows, maybe they have some kind of connection together in another dimension that this doctor/government, whoever it was, is like, "Look, these two have a strong connection. Yeah. We need to keep him forgetting his friend.
Yeah.
Because if he remembers anything about his friend,
he can't be here because the humans and the aliens are not supposed to have any kind of connection. Like, we are not supposed to impede upon their lives like that. But this guy is a runaway. He's a little kid. He's escaping a world. Maybe he was actually a... Because you know how, like, we reincarnate, and a lot of people say they reincarnate on different planets? Maybe he was on this planet before, and so he keeps trying to come here, and maybe he has some kind of, like, twin flame connection with this person. Maybe.
It could be his future self, for all we know.
Yes, exactly. Like, some kind of love thing. Like, do you ever have dreams where you, like, have kids or something? Mm-hmm. Or you have, like, a lover or something like that, and it's so real, and then when you wake up, you miss them, or you're like, what was that? Like, you feel like you had this whole life with them?
Yeah, maybe.
Sometimes I have that with, like, a kid. Like, I'm like, where's my kid? Like, I had this whole thing with them, and I'm like, I miss them. Like, what happened to them? Because of dreams I've had that were, like, so real about me having a kid or something like that.
Yeah.
And so I feel like I would constantly be looking for that kid. I think about them even though I know I don't have a kid. I think about them. So maybe this higher form of life that's an alien knows that dream or whatever, it was real, and they come here to fulfill that. Honestly, a great love story.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, friendship, love. And it could be this alien comes on the 4th of July because he knows there's a bunch of fireworks going off. Right. So the government's distracted.
Nobody's going to be looking. Flying. If they see something in the sky lining up, they're not going to be thinking alien. They're going to be thinking 4th of July firework.
Well, who knows? So that's my theory.
That's a great theory. And I love it. Thank you guys so much for listening to this very good episode of True Scary Stories with Nick and Edie.
Yes.
And I'm going to be in Sacramento. The 22nd and the 23rd at the Sacramento Punchline, the resort of all cities. And Nick is going to be in Vegas at the Dirty at 12:30 at the, what's the club called?
The South Point Casino.
The local casino. South the Point. That's where all the locals go.
Yep.
All right, guys, we will see you on the Facebook group, the Instagram, or the website, submitting your scary stories to us. And don't forget to give this 4 stars right now because we work
4.
Dang. Sorry, that was my kid telling me.
4 stars. Man.
Please give me 5.
No, give us 5. Now they're going to give us 4.
I know they are. The uglies love a joke. They love a prank. All right, guys. Give us 5 stars.
All right.
And we love you. Bye.